Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We're following three developing stories of great consequence this morning. The almost universal calls now for Governor Cuomo to resign and the corroboration of the charges against him. Mayor de Blasio's first-in-the-nation vaccination requirement for entering many public indoor spaces. And President Biden extending the eviction moratorium into October yesterday after the fierce backlash from within his own party against saying the law required him to leave it to Congress. We'll begin with Governor Cuomo. If there's any Democratic politician left who is not calling for him to resign, they are being very quiet about it. You've probably heard by now that the collapse of support for him remaining in office after the Attorney General's report came out yesterday includes Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, who had not previously called for the governor's resignation, New York Congress members Hakeem Jeffries, Mondaire Jones, and Gregory Meeks. They were in the wait-and-see camp. They've now seen enough. Rodney's Bishote, the Brooklyn Democratic Party chair and prominent assembly member who had previously said she was waiting for more information, now she says resign. A joint statement calling for Cuomo to resign was issued yesterday, did you hear this, by the Democratic governors of New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, too. And yes, as of yesterday, even President Biden.
I think he should resign. I understand that the state legislature may decide to impeach. I don't know that for a fact. I've not read all that data.
So President Biden, that's a big deal. But maybe in its way, an even bigger deal, Cuomo's lieutenant governor, Kathy Hochul, who, of course, would take over as governor, but has been loyal throughout, she issued a statement saying, quote, "The Attorney General's investigation has documented repulsive and unlawful behavior by the governor towards multiple women. I believe these brave women and admire their courage coming forward," unquote, from Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul. So the governor's support from his party for remaining in office has completely collapsed. And an overnight Marist poll of New Yorkers out this morning finds 59% say he should resign, including 52% of Democrats. Just 32% said he should remain in office. But one more thing before we bring in our first guest. This is not just a he said, she said situation. It would be bad enough if it was just for having 11 accusers who all testified under oath. Could they all just be out to get him and making stuff up or overinterpreting old-fashioned friendly gestures? But it's not just that. There's corroboration with documentary evidence and witnesses all over the Attorney General's report. And I'm not sure that's breaking through enough in some of the press coverage. So here are a few examples. In the case of Lindsay Boylan, the executive from the Empire State Development Corporation, she testified under oath that Cuomo said things to her like she was more attractive than various famous actresses and that she reminded him of an ex-girlfriend of his. Those were among her charges. The corroboration? The report says some of the comments about her appearance were corroborated by her boss at the time at Empire State Development, Howard Zemsky. It says Zemsky told Boylan he thinks the governor has a crush on her and asked Boylan if she wanted him to intervene with the governor in some way over the governor's behavior. Zemsky also testified that on an airplane trip the three of them were on in 2017, he heard Cuomo say to Boylan, "Let's play strip poker." Boylan's boss heard it and testified to it. That much alone would get a boss in many workplaces fired. Boylan was also the accuser who the governor retaliated against, according to the Attorney General's report, with the governor's office leaking part of her personnel file to the press with all names except Boylan's redacted. They have that leaked file. More corroboration? In the case of the state trooper on Cuomo's security detail, who said Cuomo was inappropriate with her multiple times, Several other troopers said they witnessed the governor doing what she charged in the case of her description of him rubbing the palm of his left hand across her stomach toward her right hip. Another trooper, who was higher ranking, described as a senior investigator, who was walking behind the governor at that moment, testified to seeing that, and others recalled hearing about this belly rub incident after it happened. Also, accuser Charlotte Bennett texted many people at the time about the inappropriateness of multiple things the governor was saying to her as she perceived it. So there's the timeliness of her texts. Also, the executive assistant who accused the governor of groping her under her shirt. Several staffers said they saw her get emotional when the governor denied one of the other accusations on TV. And then this executive assistant, only then, disclosed to them the incident she had previously kept secret. Corroboration is all over this report. One more. A photo of Cuomo touching a woman named Anna Ruck, who he met for the first time at a wedding they both attended in 2019. The photo appeared on the front page of the New York Post earlier this year. Ruck testified that after briefly shaking hands when they were introduced, Cuomo touched her back in a place where her dress had a cutout. She said she removed his hand from there quickly. The governor said, "Wow, you're aggressive," and asked, "Can I kiss you?" The touch she found inappropriate happened to be captured in a photo that then got published. With us now, WNYC and Gothamist reporter Gwen Hogan and New York State Public Radio Albany Bureau Chief Karen DeWitt. Hi, Karen. Hi, Gwen.
Good morning,
hey, Brian.
So I think the corroboration is such an important part of the story. Do either of you have an example you would add to the ones I gave, because there are others, or comment on one of those? Gwen?
Well, sure, I'll jump in. You know, that's such a great list. And yes, the corroboration is so important in this report. It's not just a document of what people said. It's these contemporaneous accounts. And for me, one that you didn't mention that really stood out was notes from two top aides, Judith Mogul, Cuomo's former attorney, and DeRossier. They have notes that are that where they describe a conversation with Charlotte Bennett last summer, and you see them walk through a conversation where they basically try to convince her that what she is describing is not sexual harassment. And she, you know, they get her to repeat, you know, most of your interactions with him were fine. Isn't that true? And eventually she, you know, as we later and we heard reported, you know, was transferred to another job and eventually left the office. But this is from their, in their words. And that I found really powerful.
Karen?
Well, I'm still trying to process all the documentation of the state trooper. I mean, the other stuff we had heard before and seemed pretty bad, but this just seems just deeply shocking. And the documentation and also some of the female trooper supervisors who really didn't do anything about it at one point said, you know, keep it in the truck, which I guess means, you know, she was driving the governor. Anything is said, you know, anything that's said in the governor's car stays in the governor's car. And that really, you know, contributed to the atmosphere that led to some of these things. But I think you're right, Brian, to really point out that this is really documented, because so much of our rhetoric these days is just politicized and it's people going around making accusations without much to back it up. Attorney General James, she didn't leave herself open to anybody saying, oh, well, this can't be true or you didn't prove this. I mean, she and her investigators, they just were very methodical. And, you know, there might have been other complaints that weren't corroborated, but they put the ones in that they could find evidence to support. And, you know, that is very important. But I would say right now it does not seem to be moving Andrew Cuomo. I mean, I'm told this morning through sources that at least as of this morning, he's not planning on resigning. He's dug in.
Listeners, your questions and comments about the governor and the attorney general's report, welcome here at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, or tweet at Brian Lehrer with New York State Public Radio Albany Bureau Chief Karen DeWitt and WNYC and Gothamist reporter Gwen Hogan. Gwen, are there certain aspects of the report that have really collapsed the governor's support, or just the totality of the whole thing?
I think that it is really the totality. You know, there was something June Kim said yesterday that these were not isolated incidents.
And June Kim, just so people know, June Kim is the former U.S. attorney who was on the attorney general's team.
Correct, correct. So he was at this press conference with Tish James yesterday. He said, these are not isolated incidents. This is part of a pattern. And as you read these more than 100 pages, you really see these similar things sort of appearing, these similar things in each of these women accounts, sort of how he intentionally targeted women who he found attractive, elevated them, brought him into his inner circle, and then made just sort of, you know, starting with comments about their bodies, about the way that they dressed, constant comments about their clothing, you know, if he didn't like a hairstyle. And you sort of see each of these women describing how that played out in a separate way in their personal experience.
Karen, is anyone left in support of the governor remaining in office in Albany? Am I missing anyone?
I don't think you are. And if they are, they're not speaking up at all about this. No, he's completely alone, even more than the last time, because now we have President Joe Biden saying he should resign. Now, in the past, the governor has tried to turn that to his advantage, saying that he's, you know, he's anti-establishment. He must be doing something right if all the politicians are against him. He's even said he's the victim of cancel culture. But this just is an awful lot bigger than the last time, especially with the president weighing in. And it's just going to be very interesting to see if he's going to try to spin that to his favor, especially if he does have a public appearance later today. Right now, he doesn't have a public schedule, but there is some talk that maybe he might appear and have something. It'll be interesting to see how he spins this. Will he be able to go back to business as usual? I mean, he did that the last time. He started off with close allies, memorably NAACP President Hazel Dukes, a close family friend. He had a rally with her, and slowly he brought in politicians who had asked him to resign, including the Senate leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins appeared at an event with him. So is he going to try to build back and go back to business as usual as this plays out? It seems unimaginable, but I think it seems like that's the only choice he has, is to try that right now.
Also with us briefly now, New York State Senator Brad Hoylman of Manhattan, chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the State Senate, which would be involved with any impeachment trial. Senator, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Brian.
Let's jump ahead a few steps, and if it gets to the point where a majority of the Assembly votes to impeach, that goes to the Senate. How would that trial process work?
Well, it worked very similar to what we saw at the federal level. The Assembly would be responsible for conducting the trial. They would have their floor managers. And we, senators, excluding the majority leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and the lieutenant governor, would sit as jurors along with the members of the Court of Appeals.
And so all the senators plus seven members of the state's highest court, the Court of Appeals, would be the ones ultimately voting to acquit or convict on impeachment charges?
That's right. You know, I hope it doesn't get that far, to be honest, because we're talking about the machinery of government coming to a grinding halt. And remember also, Brian, that during this impeachment proceeding, as soon as the governor is impeached, he has to step aside from office. So it would be, to say the least, a enormous event, even if we begin to draw up articles of impeachment through the state assembly.
Oh, so that's different than in the federal case. When President Trump was impeached, he stayed in office while the Senate held a trial, two trials. But in the case of the governor of New York, he would have to step aside and the lieutenant governor would take over while that trial in the Senate took place?
That's correct.
If the governor thinks he's in... Oh, go ahead. Who wanted to jump in there?
I wanted to ask the senator a question. I'm sorry, Brian.
Please,
honing
please,
in on your
please.
I'm job there. Hi, Senator Hoylman. Here. What I'm wondering, though, if the governor doesn't resign, isn't an impeachment trial inevitable at this point, if he stays?
I would completely agree with you. Look, that's one of the reasons why we want to move this, trial, to move these articles of impeachment, as they will be written, as quickly as possible. I think that the Assembly could move on the Attorney General's report alone. Goodness knows we have enough detail to demonstrate a pattern of abuse of power at the highest levels of state government.
Senator, before you go, it's easier to find a variety of opinions among New Yorkers on the street than among politicians right now. Is that a disconnect on the part of elected officials, or ignorance on the part of a third of New Yorkers, or how would you characterize that difference?
Well, I would say this, Brian. An overnight poll showed 59% of New Yorkers want the governor to resign or be impeached. That has moved appreciably just over the last few months. This is only a matter of time. I think sometimes the public is way ahead. Sometimes government officials are ahead. In this instance, I think we will merge at the same conclusion: the governor must go.
State Senator Brad Hoylman, thanks for giving us a few minutes.
Thanks so much.
And with New York State Public Radio Albany Bureau Chief Karen DeWitt and WNYC and Gothamus reporter Gwen Hogan, Jennifer in East Harlem, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in, Jennifer.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. You know, I have been someone who has come forward throughout my life to expose and report transgressing men in graduate school and in various places throughout my life, and I know what a process this is. I have faced enormous retaliatory measures and retribution in many forms, so I really commend the women who have come forward. I do want to say, and I was struck by the New York Times article which addressed this, which I think is so critical, that number one, Cuomo's defiance is again just a further reflection of his personality. Of course he wouldn't see that he's done anything wrong, because it's consistent with everything else about him. And I think that he cannot be underplayed in the analysis of this. But beyond that, you know, these men operate in systems and in frameworks that give them such enormous latitude to transgress. And I think it's also very important, and this was certainly true in my experiences, that some of the worst culprits and those who are the most complicit in the allowance of this happen to be many of the women who surrounded Cuomo and all of the men like this who we have heard about over the past several years. And I think we need to do a much better job of addressing that, because these men are what they are. The types that achieve this kind of power and positioning have a certain kind of personality profile.
Jennifer, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much for your call. And let's address what I think is Jennifer's core comment there. Karen, for you as a longtime Albany reporter, the caller says this whole Cuomo situation is a direct consequence not only of his personality, but of the entitlement that he gets in the framework in which he operates, which facilitates and provides latitude for behavior like this. How much does your experience tell you that's the case?
Well, his family has run New York State for quite a while. His father before him had 3 terms. He didn't grow up in the mansion, but he, you know, was a frequent visitor to the mansion and has lived there for, you know, a decade now. And I think you do get entitled. Also, Andrew Cuomo is really, really good at consolidating power. And I think that we have seen that play out in some good ways, where he's gotten things done that couldn't be done. Remember a decade ago when New York was the first major state to approve same-sex marriage, where he just, I don't know, bullied, threatened a few Republican senators, persuaded them to vote for it. And in some ways, consolidating power in a big, messy state like New York can be to your benefit. But we're seeing now that there's a downside, because after a while, you're surrounded by people who just, they don't say no to you, or they bought in to your personality, as we see in the report, where they kind of normalized any bad behavior that he was exhibiting. And there are people, I see that in politics, I don't like to think of myself as one of them, who are just, they're attracted to power. There's an attraction to power, and it attracts a certain kind of aid and a certain kind of people around you, and sometimes I think they sadly get blinded by it.
Nick in Cliffside Park, yeah. You're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. Just to follow up on that last call, she's 100% right on, that lady was. Cuomo should, of course, we all agree he's busted, right? He's busted. He should resign. He's not likely to resign. In my humble opinion, he does fit a profile. I dare say, I would bet money that at least half of all men who achieve those kinds of levels of power and have money and power are engaged in those kinds of activities. So a lot of these guys that are now, you know, looking to stab him and kill him politically are probably guilty of the same kinds of things. It's just that he has no friends, and it's understandable. But there's a lot of sanctimonious hypocrisy. This is a societal problem. It is deeply entrenched in our whole macho, materialistic, male-dominated culture, and that's where the change has to happen. This tragedy with him, it should have happened to Kavanaugh and Judge Thomas and to President Trump before Cuomo. But if he's going to be the poster boy for big change, then maybe it'll serve a positive purpose if we take this as a societal challenge to the whole country, not just as one guy doing something horrible. That's my point.
Nick, thank you for your call. Gwen, you could comment on any part of that you want, but one part that jumps out at me is Nick saying this is collapsing for Cuomo now when other men, and maybe he was painting with a broad brush about, you know, how many men who have money or power do these kinds of things per se, but Cuomo's support is collapsing because he's a bully, so he doesn't have many friends left. It reminds me of when Elliot Spitzer was governor and the charges against him came out. He was pretty new at being governor, but he had already alienated so many Democrats in the legislature that he didn't have any friends to begin with. I'm curious how much you think that's the context in which this is happening politically.
I mean, I do think that, like, one of his greatest strengths, as Karen was talking about, was this consolidation of power that was less about consensus building and more about do as I say at this moment. This is the way that we're going to move right now. And I think that, you know, we've seen over the past few years more left-leaning lawmakers in the state assembly and the state senate be elected, toppling that, you know, the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference, a few years ago, and that there's sort of this new way about thinking about power that sort of is challenging the ways that the state typically operated. I mean, we know for years that sexual harassment has been a huge issue in Albany and, you know, widespread across the legislature as well. And so we've sort of seen this is beginning to change, but Cuomo, who'd been in power for more than a decade, right? He is obviously still in power. But we see sort of how he's done that over the years.
We'll take a break. Go ahead, Karen. You want to add something, please?
I would just add to this. I know that, you know, it's cliche to call someone Machiavellian, but Cuomo is really, truly seems to follow the advice of the prince. Better to be feared than loved. Mm. And I think people fear him here, but nobody likes him. And I would go as far to say that I've talked to many people in the Capitol over the years. They wouldn't say it publicly, but they hate him. And that's coming back now.
We'll continue our coverage in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk about the New York State Attorney General's report on Governor Cuomo's behavior and the political response, the collapse of support for him among everyone from his own attorney general to his own lieutenant governor, I should say, to President Biden. Let me play a clip from the governor's pre-recorded video defense yesterday. He apparently recorded this after reading the attorney general's report, but before her news conference.
I want you to know directly from me that I never touched anyone inappropriately or made inappropriate sexual advances. I am 63 years old. I've lived my entire adult life in public view. That is just not who I am. And that's not who I have ever been.
Governor Cuomo, yesterday, as we continue with New York State Public Radio, Albany Bureau Chief Karen DeWitt, and WNYC and Gothamist reporter Gwen Hogan. Gwen, he seems to be saying this is not who he is, but he also admits to doing many of the things as who he is, as an old school guy. But how could he, as recently as last year when some of these incidents took place, think that kind of touching was just playful or affectionate or fatherly or not harassing?
Right. I mean, that's sort of something that you see in this report as well. You know, investigators interviewed Cuomo for 11 hours and they described a similar thing where he flatly denies certain allegations but admits to certain comments, but that he had different intention, that they were interpreted, which is not the way that sexual harassment law is written, right? Like, it's not up to the individual's interpretation if I think that the thing I said was a harassing statement. So he's sort of tried to, this is why these sort of mixed messages that he's sending out is why the investigators, you know, over and over and over again in these 11 accounts were like, this is not a credible defense. This is not a credible defense. Sort of when they were matching up the texts and emails and, you know, and interviews with what he was saying and the evidence that he was providing.
And Karen, before we go back to some calls, for you as a longtime Albany reporter, was the governor's behavior toward women one of these like open secrets that nobody chose to make a big deal of until the dam burst this year?
Well, honestly, it was not an open secret to me. And I was pretty surprised when it happened that he would go that far, because I viewed him as a very smart and savvy politician, and I really couldn't imagine him crossing the lines like this report said that he did that would endanger his political future. Certainly, he can sometimes make a, you know, a little bit of an off-color joke. He's in some ways seemed kind of stuck in the 1990s with his humor, but no, I really did not realize, you know, how far that he had gone with some of these things.
Juliet in Newark, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hi, Brian. Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. What Governor Cuomo has done is something that has been going on down through the decades. I work in corporate America for 40 years, and it happened every day. And as we are speaking here, it's happening right now. But my main question that I want to ask, we are holding Governor Cuomo to what he has done, because all these women are white women. My question is, if they were black women and Latino women, would they have held him the same way they are holding him now?
Well, it's a hypothetical, so I guess we can't exactly answer it. But Karen, these 11 accusers, are they all white women? Did Cuomo kind of go for white women, as the report seems to reveal it?
Well, we don't know that. The caller might be right that maybe black women were just, you know, didn't feel entitled enough to speak out about anything that might have happened. So that, yeah, that really is an unknown. As far as we know, nobody has said anything, so we can't prove it. But it did seem like he did surround himself with a certain type of woman, let's say a younger, good-looking white women, and most of them were executive assistants. I mean, that's one thing that struck me in the report. In this day and age, these smart, well-educated young women, they were essentially hired to take dictation. I mean, who does that anymore? You know, go into his office, help him with his phone. I mean, they just seemed like kind of low-skill jobs for these women who, you know, some of them went to prestigious colleges. I mean, that's just another thing that kind of raises questions about this whole, you know, situation.
Huh. Which, of course, brings us back to the question of power. And Gwen, even though the caller's premise is a hypothetical, would everybody be holding his feet to the fire as much now if these victims had been black? We have to look at it in terms of power, because certainly, you know, power has the power to push back. Lack of power doesn't.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, this is one of the threads, you know, when I was calling around months ago talking to people about workplace culture, that I really wanted to talk to staffers of color and what their experiences were. And many of them were afraid to talk. And I, you know, if you look at who his inner circle is, it is a majority white people, many white women. And there were, you know, a few staffers of color who managed to rise through the ranks. Alfonso David, who left is at the Human Rights Campaign. He was, you know, one of the highest level staffers of color in Cuomo's office. But I think that that is, you know, I think that there's more reporting to be done on that front.
And yeah, and again, just to be clear, we don't know the identity of every one of the accusers.
Absolutely.
And
right.
Therefore, we don't know all of their races, among other things. Logan in Crown Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Logan. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, Brian. A regular listener, and I get on ever so often. But my concern is for the black people that supports this guy. For almost 7 years, I've been calling for his resignation on Facebook. And this guy was a guy that funding white high schools, white public school students almost twice the amount of money that he spent on New York City's public schools. This guy rigged the building of a bridge and named it after his father. You know, how much more arrogant could one be? And here we have a whole bunch of black people who have suffered under his hands. You had Asa Dukes come out and call him her son to the embarrassment of black people. Yet when Kanye West came out and said, one of the major problems with black people is that we volunteer to be victims. And we have all these people supporting somebody like Andrew Cuomo without stopping to look at his policies. He has managed to drive New York to be the most segregated state in the country. This is the guy that black people are supporting. You know, we love to be victims. And it's embarrassing, it's a shame to us that we are supporting Andrew Cuomo today. What we need to do is stand up around the other politicians and advise them, if he's not going to resign, just don't do any business with him. Work around him like he's not there. Thank you, Brian.
Logan, thank you very much. Keep calling us. Karen DeWitt, how do you explain, as a longtime Albany reporter, the fact that there is such strong support for Cuomo in the black community that after these various scandals, of course, we're talking about the sexual harassment and retaliation and intimidation one, but there were others around the nursing home cover-up, et cetera. When these various things broke, he did run to an NAACP conference. He did run to Hazel Dukes. He did run to black churches and find welcoming audiences, and he was able to wrap himself in that to try to ride out the clock.
Well, I think, again, it's about power and his consolidation of power. He's worked hard through the years to gain the loyalty of some African-American leaders by doing, you know, having various policies that please them. As the caller points out, you know, some of the underlying things that are going on in the state do promote racial inequality, but that people aren't really looking at that. But I would just say it's you know, the governor's just worked really hard on that, and I guess these leaders are just, up until now, we haven't heard from them today, were reluctant to step away from him.
Let me play one more clip of the governor and then take one more call. for now. We'll come back to this later in the show. Here's another clip of the governor from his video.
Trial by newspaper or biased reviews are not the way to find the facts in this matter. I welcome the opportunity for a full and fair review before a judge and a jury, because this just did not happen. Other complainants raised against me questions that have sought to unfairly characterize and weaponize everyday interactions that I've had with any number of New Yorkers.
Kate, in Jersey City, you heard the governor say that yesterday, and you wanted to comment on part of it. I think that's why you called in, right?
Yes, Brian, that is why I called in. It's driving me crazy. Of course he wants a judge and a jury, because anything could happen. The jury could be on his side. It could be he said, she said, and nobody believes the women, and people don't usually assault women in private. So he's a lot safer with a judge and a jury. Anyway, that's what I'm thinking. I don't know if any of you have any thoughts on the matter.
Karen DeWitt?
I'm just wondering, what does he mean by that? Like an impeachment jury or a criminal jury or civil cases? Because it's likely that there could be criminal cases. The Albany DA, David Soares, it was surprising to learn that he actually confirmed that there's an ongoing criminal investigation, which we didn't know about. He's not starting one. Apparently, he's already started one. The Westchester County DA is going to get involved, presumably in the case of the state trooper, because some of those incidents happened in Mount Kisco. There's also the federal investigation that's going on. Don't forget, the governor's being, you know, investigated on other fronts that we aren't even talking about. So does it come to a criminal trial? That didn't go so well for his former top aide, Joe Prococo, who was prosecuted in federal court and is now in prison. So, you know, I just think it's just part of the governor's, you know, continued defiance at this point. He still, at least as of yesterday in that statement, he still thinks he can fight this.
Listener writes, it's so annoying that on the one hand he relishes his perception as a slick power broker who is ingenious at consolidating and recognizing power dynamics politically, and then on the other hand he can plead ignorance that he had no idea he held power over assistants in his office like that. So what happens next? Karen, I'll go back to you for this, and then we're out of time. What happens next, assuming he does not resign? How quickly does the assembly take a vote on whether to impeach?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could probably come right after Labor Day. I don't see how any assembly Democrats could vote against it at this point, because their own political future would be endangered. And also, as I just referred to, there's still a federal investigation into whether he and his aide hid the true number of COVID deaths at nursing homes. The Attorney General, James, has another investigation on Cuomo's $5 million book deal, whether he used staff inappropriately to write and edit that. So there's a lot of other things swirling around. There doesn't seem like there's any good outcome for the governor right now.
We will leave it there for now. We will come back to this later in the show. These developments continue to move quickly this morning. We are waiting for the governor to come out. Again, that was a pre-recorded video yesterday, apparently recorded before the Attorney General's news conference. He's going to have to answer questions from the press at some point or speak live at some point. So we're waiting for that, as well as some of the other developments. We'll come back to it later in the show, but we're going to go on to some other pretty big developing stories in their own right in just a minute. For now, we thank New York State Public Radio Albany Bureau Chief Karen DeWitt and WNYC and Gothamist reporter Gwen Hogan. Thanks both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.